across the sky to peer down at you all, each flap bringing me closer. Your idea of heaven. No, I don't believe. My prayer is a sheet of ice scrutinized by unforgiving heat. Now my words are air. Without remorse, I compose, hold you inside me. Saints are sliced in four. I sing the rhythm of their days. Spirit endures, soft as a kiss, calling us to chorus, to convene antepasados en el desierto, to swallow what they teach.
And this is a chorus of voices, and that is the voice of Francisco Aragon. The program is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. We want to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivata Foundation of the Logan Family and the Sinipet Fund, with support from Avideh Shashani. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.
I'm Mr. KBOO.FM. Them shoulda know it's accurate. Kabaka Pyramid say watch your step, you know what I mean?
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Hand him on now, whoa, 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 whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Ellen George. Her show, Slow Gestures, is on now at PDX Contemporary Art through May 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Ellen.
Thank you for having me, Joseph.
Can't believe you've never been interviewed before.
Never. You're the first.
You've been around in Portland making art for three decades.
That's right.
In galleries.
Little bit,
yeah.
with Janie mostly.
Yeah. So Jane Beebe at PDX. So we're over in her new space at 1825 Northwest Vaughan. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful L-shaped kind of space, very white, concrete floor, skylight, and it's perfect for your art because on these white walls you've mounted many 25 painted birch panels. Mm-hmm. So each panel is kind of like a giant fingernail or a blank face. They're maybe a foot tall, the big ones, a bit longer.
The big ones are 18 inches.
Some of the small ones look about 6 inches. They're all basically an oval with a kind of a dent or a notch at some place. Mm-hmm. And they curl off the wall from top to bottom. The top and bottom is away, like maybe an inch off the wall. Mm-hmm. And then on each one you've painted, it's abstraction, and you've painted mostly pastels. It seems to be a kind of battle between color and white in most of these compositions. Let's look at one that's right in the door as you come in on the left by the light switch. Mm-hmm. It's called And This. Mm-hmm. You made it last year. It's a kind of yellowy green oval, and the top is kind of like a cloud shape. There are four little bumps, and the brush marks are kind of, well, it's very hard to describe, little groups of multiple marks. Mm-hmm. Small, tiny orange, almost like pencil marks, you know, a centimeter long, and then these long gray thread-like marks that seem to cut across the surface. Tell us a bit about this. What even medium are you
What's
using?
Going on here? Well, we've just said it's birch panel. It's very thin. It's 1/32nd of an inch thin. Paper can be that thin. And it has a natural warp to it. When I paint on it, it takes on a little more warp. And in painting, I'll respond to that warp. And in actually contouring the panels, I'm aware and responding to the warp in the wood. I'm using gouache and also egg tempera and casein paint. the marks, we talked about these being silver point and gold and also some platinum. Each one, I have a little stylus for each one. Mm-hmm. So all the thin marks that you see are the metal points.
So this is like a pencil you buy at Blick and it's got silver in down the middle?
No, it's an actual, like a needle shape of the metal. So it's pure silver, 22 karat gold and platinum. The gold and platinum I bought from a jeweler's supply. The silver point we can find, you know, in a drawing supply store. So in drawing with those points, the actual metal is laid down on the paint, the surface of the paint, the fine grit in paint will rub off the metal.
The metal, yeah.
So I'm actually laying down thin lines of all these metals in the paint and on the painting.
But you,
I love that idea.
You can see the gold.
We see it.
I just see gray, but you see gold, silver, and platinum silver kind of color.
So the silver is a gray. And you know, grays are all different. The gold will be a warmer gray. And in the end, on different colors, these grays will have slightly different tones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they are gray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you're drawing sort of over these many layered paintings.
I'm drawing during the painting. I start out with those lines when I go to painting, you know, after I've contoured the panel and I'm ready to paint. I start with the lines. Gives me some geometry to react to with the fluid paint, the paint brushes. And I go from there back and forth between the drawing and the painting.
Yeah, just at 90 degrees to that, also by the door, there's one that has a very different kind of mark. Mm-hmm. It's mostly kind of yellow. It's got some, again, these orange kind of hair-like brush marks. It's called Listening to Everything. But at the bottom, there's a kind of a, almost like a chin, and it's green with a bit of purple. And it looks like something's been rubbed off. So tell me about that mark.
In the end, after this whole surface, something about this chin that you described motivated me to put this dark brush stroke across the bottom, and then I wiped it off. So this edge is where it's dried. Mm-hmm. Very quickly, and it's gouache, so it's a paint that if you go into with water or with more paint, it moistens. And so when I wiped the dark mark off, it revealed layers that are under the entirety.
So it revealed a bit of the yellow that was under some of the other yellow.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a stain. If you wipe a coffee stain and the ring is dried, but the middle was thinner, and some remains.
Yes.
And that's the purple kind of line.
That's what made this line. So this line is made because the edge of the stain, as you say, had dried. It dries that quickly. I was able to wipe away part that was wipeable, that was wet, but it left a little dry mark.
There's kind of a subtle pink glow on the wall behind this piece.
Right.
And then as you look around, in this bright light on a white wall, pretty much every one has a colored glow reflecting off the wall.
Yes.
Can you tell us what it is in this case?
Oh, yeah. In this show, every piece is painted on the back to cast color in the shadow, cast color on the wall. For me, in general, I feel like it is enlivening the piece, the painting, and extending its domain a little bit and extending its energy. That's why I do it.
Yeah. These are very subtle abstract works. You really got to peer into them from quite close to see the marks, to see the variations in color and surface texture. Mm-hmm. And then you've added this little illumination behind.
Yeah.
When you work, when do you do the back? And do you do it right at the end or in the middle or what?
During, not at the beginning. I start on the front. I start with making the panel and mm-hmm. working on the front of the panel. Very quickly, I do go to thinking about the back, you know, how the whole piece is going to be mm-hmm. on a wall. And I paint holding the panels in my hands and in my lap. They're all that size here. They're either hand size, hand, face, and torso. So even the bigger, the 18-inch ones, mm-hmm. I can hold in my lap and work on. But I do put them on the wall or hold them against the wall and work with the back glow mm-hmm. and see what's happening, see how it's working with the colors on the front. And as the paint on the front evolves, I have to change the back too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
You know, so that so it's back and forth between the back and the front.
If you've got like a yellow glow for the back and then you don't like it, would you just totally change the color and go to orange?
Just like on the front, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
These paintings are also kind of the size of a palette, like a painter's palette. They're that shape.
Yeah.
So you can sit there with them in your arm.
Right.
Right. With the glove on or something, or how do you keep
no.
them nice?
I don't wear gloves. I know a lot of people do paint with gloves on, but I don't. I don't.
So you're just holding it, painting it?
Mm-hmm. Holding across the forearm like this. Mm-hmm. It's balanced. It's probably, let me think about it. Yeah, it's probably, an edge is probably pressing against the front of my body a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you conceive of them as hanging in someone's on wall, right? Because you've got this background thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you say to Jane, only sell these to people with wire walls?
I don't say that. But I do think of these as paintings, even though there is a sculptural quality because of the warp.
So this material, this thin birch, mm-hmm. is rigid, very light, and you say people buy it and make architectural models and mm-hmm. model airplanes and things like that.
I think so. I think it's sold for model making.
Mm-hmm. You just buy it by the square foot?
I found a place, if anyone wants to know, I found a place where I order it and I can get it in 4 foot square mm-hmm. sheets and it's shipped to me. But we can find it in craft stores too. It's a plywood. It's really stable stuff. It's actually three super thin layers
mm-hmm.
glued.
And then how do you know what shape you're going to make and how do you cut it out?
Mm. Well, I practice Tai Chi a lot. It's a very important deep practice for me. And over the years, as it's deepened, it was a natural incorporation for me to draw. Thinking about the Tai Chi movements and thinking about the circularity of the arm and the body. And I don't paint, you know, make the panels from the drawings, but I made drawings, and I do still, and look at those drawings and derive a shape that I want to use for the panel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for a pleasing shape, an emergent shape, something that seems like it's coming to life. I mean, these shapes and the surface marks remind us of all kinds of things, and I talk about that. And people give me their ideas, and mm-hmm. I have my ideas, but they aren't any really one particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
But so in looking for that pleasing shape, I will then transfer it, you know, transfer the drawing after paper drawings to drawing on the panel, and then begin to contour the panels, cutting them.
Is that what contour means? Cutting, cutting
that's
out.
That's shaping.
Yeah.
I suppose. Yeah.
But not the warp. The warp comes
the
later.
The warp is there. The warp is already there.
How come you're buying warp?
It comes in a roll. And it's so thin, it's floppy. You know, so it's not rigid. Like, it is thicker, but at 1/32nd of an inch, it's like a piece of paper.
It's got a grain, right? It warps easily one dimension.
It yeah, it's plywood, right? So it warps where it on the side that gets wettest. during the painting. So it will warp during the painting, and then as the painting dries, the warp is released and it goes back to its just sort of original warp, that, you know, the way it came to me. Mm-hmm. So I make these, the shapes are made responding to those movements. And then so is the painting. The brushwork is also responding to that, to the kinds of movements and sensitivity that I have in practicing Tai Chi, because in Tai Chi, I'm thinking about drawing energy up and through the body and out of the body, and a harmonious balance from foot to foot today, but typically. And so I'm using those kinds of sensibilities in the brushwork.
My name's Joseph Galliman. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Ellen George. Her show, Slow Gestures, is on now through May 27th at PDX Contemporary Art in Northwest Portland. Around the corner, there's one called This Way, and it's blue. It's a lot of blue. Lots of navy, royal sky. And then in the middle is this kind of, it almost looks like kind of thistle fur. Mm. And there's almost a shape. You can almost see like nostrils or, you know, wings.
Sure.
Thing. You know, everything else is kind of fiercely abstract. I mean, the blue stripes down the left, it seems to be a different kind of application of paint. It's a lot thicker and wetter than the others.
It's definitely wetter. That is my nose, I think. Now that you mention it, it does kind of look like my, but it seems like I was working at the center, right, with the brushwork, tiny brushes. And I follow the brush when I'm painting, you know, and I feel like I was thinking about that center of energy here, you know, that I wanted to expand. This mark, this section here that seems very fluid, is using a completely different kind of brush, a bigger brush, because as I got to working with bigger panels, I bought bigger brushes.
Mm-hmm.
This is just, you know, a big dark wash of color, and it seemed like that seemed right. I didn't see that I needed to change it anymore after I did this. That's the final brushstroke on this one here.
Mm-hmm. So you were known for working very small. You did these really small 3x5 paintings.
That's true.
For years with tiny brushes.
I did too.
And partly it was because you were a dental technician. What did you do which was small work all day?
I've always been drawn to the tiny, tiny things that we can hold in our hand. I mean, I just am still amazed at how much power small scale has. And as humans, we're drawn to the microscopic and the very large, you know, the universe. So we like the extremes, mm-hmm, in size. And so in my work, I'm trying to, I like working small. That just feels right. It feels like home to me. I'm also wanting to expand the feeling, that energy, much larger without expanding the scale, the actual scale of the work so much.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to work in that way. And I did work very tiny for a very long time, incorporating the Tai Chi practice, thinking about Tai Chi, and that kind of movement really did expand the scale,
mm-hmm,
some. And it's 18 inches still seems small to a lot of people. To me, Janie said, oh, billboards. I mean, for me, they're very big. it's a very different experience to work at the scale.
So in Tai Chi, you wave your arms around a lot, and you're saying that creates this gesture is something you wanted to bring into art.
The feeling of the movement and this, and listening for the energy that moves through the body while we make those movements are something that I want to bring into my practice painting and hopefully to the viewer.
Mm-hmm. You think viewers will get it?
Do I think viewers will get it? We can always hope. I don't know if they will or not. They seem to get it if I talk about it.
Yeah. That's why you're here.
But it's okay. I don't Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I have to think about that. Well, I think the viewers will get it?
Which is
the connection?
Which is better for your particular mood, Tai Chi or painting?
That's another good question.
Like if you had
question,
to ditch one.
I wouldn't ever want to have to ditch one.
But if you had to?
If I had to? Can I think about that and get back to you on that?
I can give you 5 minutes in.
That's a tough question.
But a lot of artists don't have this other thing that they can bring into art so physically. They might have religion or books they read, you know, that comes into their art one way.
Before, I really was aware that my Tai Chi practice was informing the work so directly and strongly. I did always have a strong connection of my body to the work. A while back, I made a big series of polymer works on a straight steel rod, or some, I guess there were some on wood rods that had some curve to them, but anyway, I always thought of that rod, that straight line, which is echoed in the straight lines in Silver Point and other metal points in these paintings, as an axis, you know, as a physical and a mental still point or axis around which everything else could move. And I think of my physical body that way. I like to know where I am in space and have balance, and I think about that physical balance extending to a mental balance, an equilibrium. And so in the polymer works, I was working with that idea also of the body, and they were small in scale. Even the long, 4 or 5 feet long ones, or great big installations of them, were comprised of tiny components, very small, off the fingertips. So I've always had that physical fingertip connection to making forms.
In these works, you're kind of varying the palettes, you know, some of them, this one particularly,
right,
brush is very pink and blue and turquoise with a lot of obvious marks, you know, like surface marks.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about picking your palette? It also has a kind of a pinkish glow behind it.
Mm-hmm. Very free with the palette. Yeah, I don't have any rules. There, I don't, or restrictions.
You don't do color wheels or any of that?
No, I just go,
just go for it.
I do. And what looks good? What looks good? Catch of the day. Yeah.
The day's specials are these two big black ones on the end wall. The very dark one, it's called Brief, and the one next to it, Moonbeam.
Yeah.
They're both kind of eggplant derived. Purple and black color. The one on the left actually looks like a blueberry. It's even the tone of the highlights. It looks like purple under bright light. What was it about these that you went so dark? Are these born out of a singular mood?
That's such a good question. I don't think they are. Or I think they each all are. Born of a singular mood.
Oh, one mood for everything.
Yeah, maybe so. In these, the scale of this one and the form of this one on the right in their making felt very strong to me. Maybe that is what made me want to make them dark. And overall very dark, even though there is a lot of color in each painting, it's a lot of dark color.
I should say that as you look in the length of the gallery, this is the final far wall. It just has two. The one on the left, it looks like a plum. It's got that dimple on the top. Mm-hmm. The one on the right is odd because it has an almost right angle, which yeah. none of them really do. But you say these two are related? Did you do them at the same time?
No, I did not. This is much earlier. I think they're all related, Joseph.
You do them one at a time?
No more. In these, I'm making the panels one at a time, but I will paint two and even sometimes three at a time. It's helpful to do that because the paint really needs time to dry. So it's good to have something else to go to and let one rest.
Okay, I'll let you off that question, but you do have to
describe. What was the question?
Which would you ditch, painting or Tai Chi?
I hope my Sifu does not hear this interview, my teacher.
Your what?
My Sifu, my teacher.
Oh, is that what the teacher's called?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. I would, gosh, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I would ditch the Tai Chi.
What's the, how?
I don't think I'll ever have to ditch
you
either.
You won't have to, of course.
Because I believe, I can't know. I believe I will be able to paint for as long as I want to paint. And I believe that I will be able to practice Tai Chi for as long as I want to. Because I don't need to stand. We don't need fancy clothing or any of that. It's really, it can be even a mindset, you know. I feel like I could practice Tai Chi without moving the body. I do move the body.
Mm-hmm. You could do it in a wheelchair.
I could. Anyone could. It's really beautiful in that way. It's very inclusive.
You don't have to go to the park?
All ages. No, you don't have to go to the park. I don't go to the park. Not much. We have done, but I do it at home all the time.
How do they overlap, painting for you and Tai Chi? What are they in common?
Yeah.
How do you feel?
So there is a listening, a sensing, I suppose, and that is where the overlap is for me. Now, in moving Tai Chi, there's moving the body in space. In painting, I'm moving the hands and the body as I'm holding or painting, but I'm also looking outward. I'm looking at the surface of the painting. I don't think I'm not looking at something specific in Tai Chi, so there's not overlap there, but I think the overlap is in the sensing, where to in the painting, where to make the next line, where to draw the line, where to draw the brush across the surface.
And they are kind of meditative works. Whoever buys this and sticks it on their wall, he's gonna like slow down to appreciate it, I think.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was painter Ellen George. Her show, Slow Gestures, is on now at PDX Contemporary Art at 1825 Northwest Vaughan through May 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Ellen.
Thank you for having me. You're absolutely delightful. Thank you.
Like to take a cement fix, be a standing cinema. Dress my friends up just for show, see them as they really are. Put the people in my brain, two new pens to have a go. I'd like to be a gallery, put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream, and him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
and he take a little snooze. Tie him up when he fast asleep, send him on a pleasant cruise. When he wake up on the sea, he's sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about glue, what a jolly boring thing to do.
Andy, whoa, whoa, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
Por la 90.7 FM y en la internet kboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 16 de mayo del 2023. La emergencia pública mundial causada por el COVID-19 puede haber terminado oficialmente, pero la pandemia seguirá con nosotros por muchos años. Tampoco está claro que los gobiernos hayan aprendido lo suficiente del brote como para estar preparados para luchar contra los nuevos microbios emergentes que podrían desencadenar calamidades peores. Estas son las crudas conclusiones de los científicos que reaccionaron a la noticia de la semana pasada de que la Organización Mundial de la Salud